On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh boy.
Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
I am holding on as tight as my little...
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. Of which I speak of myself in a flattering, egotistical manner that only a radio talk show host can do. And everybody else, too. Hello, welcome to the program, full of fun and flavor. I am Flavor Flav Van Dam. That's what they call me, with a giant clock around my neck. All right, stop it. This is disgusting. The show's starting. It's disgusting already. I broke the law. I broke the law this morning. I broke the law. Showered, brushed my teeth, did my whole routine. And then I opened up the little drawer under my mirror in the bathroom, and there it sat, a whole box of Q-tips. Uh-oh, Q-tips, don't you go there. Nobody knows what they're for other than to do what you're not supposed to do with them. Yeah. You know what it is. I have no idea why they made Q-tips. I don't know what the Q stands for. They're not in the shape of any kind of Q, the letter Q. I don't know what that would be. It doesn't look like it. It's not Quattenstrob swabs. What does the Q stand for? Quiet. Quiet. I'm going to use it on my ears. Quiet. They say emphatically, don't stick the Q-tips in your ears. You can... get them clean if you're not careful. You can damage your eardrums. Yeah, right. Which is worse, going to a rock concert or cleaning your ears with Q-tips? Any rock concert. It's, so I opened up the drawer and there they were. Yeah. Then I looked around the bathroom to see if there were any Q-cops standing around so I wouldn't be arrested, because one year I actually I was irritated by that silly little tag on the pillow, the one that says do not remove under penalty of law. Well, it was like cutting into the side of my head, and it bothered me, and it made it like a flapping sound. And Ron don't do flapping sounds, baby. Ron don't do flopping sounds or flapping sounds. So I started pulling on it, and the damn thing wouldn't come off because it's secured there under penalty of law. And so I went into the other room, and I got myself a pair of scissors, and I cut the tag off. Well, don't you know, within about 30 seconds, six guys wearing black suits, black ties, and funny-looking hats that nobody wears anymore were standing behind me in the mirror, and I turned around and I said, what are you guys doing here? How'd you get in my house? And they said, excuse me, did you just remove the tag from your pillow? No. Well, then what are the scissors doing in your hands? You caught me. Well, they had me put my hands behind my back. They cuffed me with a cuff. And they led me out. I did 6 hard years in a penitentiary in another division. It's a separate part of the penitentiary where they only house those criminals that have removed pillow tags. And Oh, they were a wild bunch. There was a crazy Edna. Oh, she was mad. She was just a mad woman. She had removed up to 20 pillow tags in her lifetime. Yes, she had. Yes, she was a career tag mover. She removed tags from everything. And I said, let me see your t-shirt. And there was no tag in the back of it. Crazy, crazy Edna. She was doing some hard time, baby. She was doing some hard time. Yeah. And there was pathetic Frank. Oh, pathetic Frank. He was a repeat offender as well. Apparently, there's no rehabilitation for this. But this guy would read comic books all day, and he was mean. One of his teeth were crooked, and it wasn't because he chipped it during a bank robbery. It was because he genetically had a tooth that was growing in the wrong direction. It was fascinating. And we would sit there all day. Someday we're going to get out. Someday we're going to get out of here. And one day my attorney showed up and he said, Ron, we're getting you out early. And I said, thank God, I've been here for 10 minutes. And they sat me down in front of they put a lamp in my face, which actually went very, very well with my nose. It was attractive for me. And there was a guy on the other. I couldn't see his face, but they called him Lefty. And I said, why they call you Lefty? And he says, I don't know. I said, okay, I'll accept that. And he grilled me. He grilled me on both sides with tomatoes, bacon, and cheese. Then he said, are you ever going to remove another pillow tag again? And I said, you bet I won't. I'm out of this place, baby, and I'm never coming back. And then one day, I was shooting at some food, and up to the ground came a bubbling crude. And everyone knows, I was at JCPenney's, and I was walking around and looking at shoes and things like that, as people at JCPenney's tend to do. They look at shoes. And then all of a sudden I decided to walk around the store, and I saw the mattress and pillow section. My heart fluttered. I think it was too much gas because I had had a taco earlier on in the day. And my eyes were just drawn to this pillow, and I got closer and closer and closer, and there was the tag. The tag was laughing at me. You cut me off and look what happened to you. Now you're a registered tag offender. And the tag was talking to me. And I said, well, either I'm just obsessed with pillow tags, or I got to lay off these drugs. One or the other has got to stop. Yeah, I did my hard time. I did my hard time. I did the time. Yeah, I did hard time. I did hard time. And I found Jesus. He was in the next cell, which was odd. Actually, it was Jesus. He was busted on some other charge. Back home, Jesus, because I like to tell people I found Jesus when I was doing hard time. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you enjoyed that story because that was totally made up.
And that was another funny story from Ron. Wait, that was supposed to be funny? Wow.
All right, here's the deal. I've had it. I'm pissed, and I've had it. And that's the deal, and I'll tell you why. If you just stop rushing me. God. Off my back. Seriously. Breathing down my neck. Cut it out. I'll tell you, shut up. Here's the deal, man. I still look out my window. And I still say to myself, I can't believe I'm seeing grass. I am obsessed with the snow thing. I've got about a 1 foot square of snow still on my lawn. And it's a little remnants of days past. But I'm pissed because it was a horrible, horrible, horrible winter. And as much as those snow plowers did the best that they could, it wasn't good enough. I want technology that melts snow. I want an explanation. You know, we live in an age where, you know, with social media, we can gather together and we can make a difference. I want an explanation. I really do. And I know a lot of people say, Ron, all right, it was a tough winter. Get over it, man. The snow's gone. Move on with your life. You know, I have moved on with my life. Since the snow, I've had 16 children. So, I've moved on. The point is, someone should pay for this. Who's going to pay for this? I say the governor of Massachusetts. I really do. I think he took the job. Bad stuff happened. Charlie Baker, I'm referring to. He's a Republican governor, and I think they've got to be nailed to the wall whenever something happens, just like you do with the Democrats. And I want an explanation. I want to know why the trains didn't run. Well, because they're old and they break down. And yes, right. And is that an explanation? No. I want to know why you inconvenienced me, why people couldn't get to work, why they were stranded. It was a little snow, baby. There are other cities in this great country that have far more snow than this on a regular basis. So I want an explanation. I want someone to pay for this. I want someone to get hurt. I want somebody to actually lose their job, be penniless, live in a tent because they screwed everybody up. I want an explanation. This is the age of explaining things. You can't just say, oh, Ron, that was in the past. Just forget it. No. Someone's going to pay. Went out to dinner a few nights ago to a Mexican restaurant. No, that's not Mexican. Wrong music. Anyway, I went to a Mexican restaurant, and it was delightful. It was absolutely delightful. And I just love the Mexican people. I really do. I do. And I'm going to say some horrible, horrible things right now because I'm making fun of people. And that's what I do. But they are wonderful people. They are so wonderful. They look similar to each other because they're all Mexican people. See, in the United States, there's nobody that looks American. You look Irish, you look Jewish, you look Catholic. I don't know what that looks like. Everybody looks kind of different because of their heritage. And then you get to these countries where people look inbred. They're inbred all the time. They just all look the same, with the only variation is they wear different color t-shirts. Other than that, I can't tell them apart. And I'm going to be very insensitive here because it's true and you know it is and you won't say it out loud like I will. When I go to a Chinese restaurant, I love Chinese food. I love all kinds of food. I love American, Chinese food, different cultures, different backgrounds, different countries. I love it. But I have a problem remembering what my server looks like. And I'm not talking about my computer server. If it's a Chinese waitress, which is the female version of this, I literally have no idea from one to the other, unless their hair length is like totally different and I happen to notice it. The Chinese waiters, which are the male versions of them, I have no freaking idea who's who. Whoever invented those name tags, hello, my name is, which is supposed to demean business people on conventions, Chinese waiters and waitresses must wear these things because I have no idea who you are. I glance up, and thank you for serving my food and taking my order and especially bringing my drinks. I appreciate it, but I can't. I know it's very small of me, but I can't. You all look the same. And that's the problem that I had in this Mexican restaurant, because, again, the Mexican people are very Mexican people. Lovely, wonderful, wonderful people. But if you put two of them, if a Mexican person or a Chinese person stole my wallet, which isn't going to happen, by the way, because I never take it out of my pants, ever, ever. If someone stole it and there was a lineup at the police station, I'd say, whatever, just like nail all of, I have no idea who is who. I don't know. I couldn't even tell who to ask. I don't know. I don't know who's who. I have no idea. I'm sorry. Take my wallet. Take my wallet, please. Because I can't tell. I don't know. I just don't. Maybe I just don't notice enough. Maybe if I looked harder, then I would be able to, but I can't. I just can't. And I'm very sorry about that. And I do apologize for that profusely. So anyway, some Mexican restaurant and of course, the drink of the day in a Mexican restaurant is quite obviously the margarita. I don't know who this girl is, Marguerite, but she invented one hell of a drink. Unless it's too sugary, then I can't drink that shit. But otherwise, it's a tasty little Mexican feast. It's got tequila in it, which is supposed to be the strongest alcohol that is made, to the point where worms actually are attracted to it and then die in the drink itself. It's amazing how that. What other drink? I mean, it's not like, I'll have an Absolut vodka, please, and make sure that dead beetle is in it, please. But apparently in tequila, you got to have worms. You got to have worms in it. I don't understand that. Anyway, so ordered that wonderful, wonderful beverage. I had a couple of them. Maybe that's why I can't tell the difference between what people look like. Maybe that's why. And then I got to the ordering page, which is where you order from, which is the menu. It's called the menu, the ordering page. It's called the menu, Ron. And I'm looking at the zapatitas, the flapapitas, the capatitas, the margaritas, the hapatitas, the fajitas, the pachitas, the chimichakis, patitas. And I'm noticing that the Mexican cuisine, as tasty as it is only just three things. It's chicken, beef, maybe some pork, and maybe shrimp, and that's pretty much it. They'll throw a fish in it, but it's going to be tilapia, which is what I call the normal fish. You know, like if you were walking down the street and you saw a tilapia, go, oh, what the fuck, it's a tilapia. You know, you wouldn't go crazy about it. You know, like if you saw a salmon walking down the street, you go, whoa, man, it's a salmon. Tilapia, it's like, whatever. So anyway, yeah, and where I come from, tilapias go walking down the street frequently, and you just don't notice them. Anyway, so that's it. It's floured shit and corn tortillas with different stuff in it, and it's all it is. And it's all the same stuff. It's just different shell casings. And of course, the most common one is the taco, where you can get a hard shell or a soft shell. And after that, it's all soft shell, man. Enchiladas, yeah, same thing. Chimichanga, we'll throw it in a deep fryer for a couple of seconds. But it's all like, you want guacamole and sour cream? You have guacamole? People go nuts over guacamole like it's like a drop from the heavens. Hey, Bob, they got guacamole. Get out of here. You can't. Avocados? Yes. I don't know how they do it. Oh, man, they slice the avocado in half or something. They take the pit out. It's unbelievable. Guacamole. Guacamole is frequently extra because it is so incredible. It is, it gives orgasms to people who shop at Whole Foods. It's an incredible little green thing. And do I get guacamole with it? No, that's extra. Okay, if it's, I don't care. I want guacamole. It's amazing that Americans can even pronounce that thing. It's wikakuli, bakatula, guacamole. And then in the Mexican restaurants, they throw the American twist on it. And the waiters and waitresses in the Mexican restaurant, they call it guacamole. But the Americans call it guac. They don't have time for the amole part. Oh, I don't have time. I'm going to die someday. And if I say amole too much after the guac, I've shortened my life considerably. We call it guac for short, because of our love for it. We nickname it guac. You got guac? Oh, you're cool. Oh, you're cool. You're calling the avocado guac. Wow, you are way cooler than I am. The way you've come up with a nickname for the avocado food. Whoa, impressive. You are so cool. You're so into everything, man. Wow, guac. Wow, man. Whoa, you got a personal relationship with the avocado, don't you? And then there's a fajita. The fajita is nothing but a piece of flour. And they take a skillet and they put meat and peppers in it and onions, and they give it to you on the skillet when it's hot on a board. And you go, wow. Well, ladies and gentlemen, go home, get a skillet, throw some shit in it, and you'll find it very similar. Wow, but it's fajita. Yeah, it's not fajita. It's just crap in a pan. It's crap in a pan. Why don't you just call the restaurant Crap in a Pan with Guac? And then you get the enchilada, the homotilia, the homophilia, all these things wrapped in a flour pancake. And it's just, it's incredible. The side dishes are interesting. It goes with rice. I think most of the world eats rice with everything. I think it's the Americans that pretty much don't do the rice thing. I mean, I know how Uncle Ben got into the picture. Somehow Ben, like, got the rice in here, but we're not rice people here. We're potato people. You know, we were settled by the Irish. I don't think it was Columbus. I think it was O'Toole. We don't do a lot of rice, but in most other countries, it's all rice. Indian food, rice. Chinese food, rice. Indian, rice. Mexican food, rice. Yeah. You can't get enough rice. And then the other thing that they put on the plate besides the rice is an amazing concoction of diarrhea. And I'm sorry, but it is. It's refried beans. It's beans. It's not it's re-eaten beans is what it is. Somebody ate those fucking beans, swallowed them, regurgitated them into a pot or a pan, heated them up again, and put them on your plate. Because I swear that's what it looks like and what it tastes like. Refried beans. They are basically a bean puree that they're palming off on you. And here's the deal. If somebody sends a plate of Mexican food back to the kitchen, or they couldn't finish it all and didn't want to take it with them, those refried beans, seriously, put them in the pot, give them to the next guy. They're bean hand-me-downs. I don't know where they've been because I can't tell. So to me, refried beans are on the list of one of the most disgusting foods ever devised by any culture. It's the only culture where they will actually... Actually, that's not true. The Chinese, with their fried rice, it's not so bad that you're eating all those carbs in the rice, but we're going to throw it in a pan and we're going to fry it for you. And you're not going to be able to tell the difference whether this has been like from 3 weeks ago or whether we just made it. It'll be tasty. We'll throw a little water in there and it'll come back to life and you'll have no idea. And the Chinese people actually say we learned that from the Mexicans who just refry their beans. I mean, I don't understand. And that's your Mexican meal, ladies and gentlemen. That's about all it is. That's about all it is. And if you want a salad in the Mexican restaurant, you can't just get a tossed salad or something. You have to get a taco salad, which is some kind of meat or chicken or something, but we put it in a taco shell. As a matter of fact, when we die in Mexico, we put people in a taco shell. That's how we bury them. We have an open shell viewing of the body They are simply put in a taco shell, and we sprinkle a little cheese over their bodies, and we refry them. We they're just gone, and that's what we do. And there's your Mexican thing, and it's a fine culture. It's a fine culture, and they're wonderful, hardworking people. I wouldn't go to Mexico right now in fear of my life, but that's besides the point. Things change, you know. I felt that way about Lowell, Massachusetts, but now I'll go there. But there was a time when, Lowell, I don't think so. I'd like to live more than 10 minutes, thank you very much. But things change, you know, so it's fine. You know, they have outdoor cafes now, the whole bit, and you would never think that would be the case, ever, ever, ever. They were able to turn it around. So anyway, that's my story. And of course, when we celebrate things in Mexico, what do? We take our hat off, throw it on the ground, and dance around it. So, yeah, and when kids have birthday parties in Mexico, yeah, do they have a birthday hat, a cone-shaped hat, and a cake? No, what they do is they take an animal, they stuff it with candy and all kinds of shit, and they hang it from a tree in effigy, and then the little kids, in celebration of their birthday, get a large wooden stick, and they beat the crap out of the animal effigy figure. And happy birthday, Bob. Happy birthday, Bob. Yeah, that's how they do it. That's how they do it. But I love the people. I love the people. I just can't tell them apart.
Over the internet and into your face, it's the all-new Ron Van Dam Show on Metro South Podcasting. You've got some Van Dam on your cheek there, just up by your, yeah, right there. You probably want to wipe that off quickly. That stuff really stains.
Kids, we're going to talk to Regina Brett, and she's a, I don't know, she brings religion into what we're going to be talking about here. Let me just raise her here, let me get Regina on the phone. Let's say hello to Regina Brett, who joins us now. How are you today?
I'm great, Ron. Thanks for having me on the show.
What part of the country are you in?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Oh, nice.
The North Coast, as we call it.
The North Coast. Well, good to have you here. You've written God is Always Hiring, 50 Lessons for Finding Fulfilling Work, which isn't your first book, is it?
No, the first book is... God Never Blinks, and then I wrote a book called Deed a Miracle.
Okay. So, this is for people who are looking for fulfilling work, and not necessarily finding a job, although I guess it includes that, but I interpret it as being more so finding a talent and a specialty within yourself.
Yeah, you know, it's for people who maybe have a job, but it's really not fulfilling them anymore.
Yeah.
And some people say, I feel like I'm having a midlife crisis. And I say, it might be a midlife correction. You know, maybe it's time to just either make that job more magical, or maybe it is time to find something else.
Okay. So do you feel that in your conversations that a lot of people had this need and there was this emptiness in them?
You know, I've been a journalist for 30 years, and I can tell you the difference between somebody who loves their job and somebody who tolerates it. The people who love it have such joy and passion and excitement. Their eyes light up. And it doesn't matter what they do. They could be a parking lot attendant, a steel worker, a nurse, or a secretary. If they love their job, you can feel it. And the people who don't, you can feel it.
Oh, you
can. It oozes their pores. Ugh, I hate this job.
I know. And then you don't want to be around them. You kind of like start walking backwards and go,
right.
okay, bye.
Exactly.
Bye. Yeah, it's true.
Right. And you don't want to be one of those people.
Yeah, I mean, let's use the parking attendant, even though it's a fine job. But you can say to yourself, I'm the best damn parking attendant in the world. I mean, nobody does this like I do.
Well, I met one day in Akron. I had parked my car, went to leave, went to pay my few dollars.
Yeah.
And the gentleman in the little booth, he was so happy and joyful, and he blessed me. He gave me like a little blessing. And I said, do you do this for everybody? He said, oh, yes, this is my mission. He saw himself as sort of the welcoming person at the parking lot. Total joy over being a parking lot attendant. And I thought, wow, if he can make that job his mission in life, what about the rest of us?
It's so true. You know, when I used to go down to the station every morning, the radio station, I'd stop off the convenience store and get my cheap coffee. And there was a guy behind the counter, and every time I walked in, he would say, "Hey, how are you today, boss? You're doing, you're looking good today. Here's the man." And it would start my day every day with a smile on my face. And had it not been for his attitude, that whole chunk of life might have been totally different.
And what an imprint he left on you and probably everybody that walks in there because he loves what he does. Think of the difference if he hated it.
Yeah.
How you would not look forward to seeing.
No, I probably, well, I
we
go.
We don't have that choice.
Yeah, I know. So maybe we can start dispensing these good feelings and what is that called? Paying forward? Is that what that's called? I don't know what that's called.
Pay forward when you do something good without having any reason to, and hopefully somebody else.
Yeah, I always have a reason. What is the connection? There seems to be, I won't say a religious connection, but your books bring God into everyday life. Why is that important to do to you?
It's important for me to do, and I don't look at it so much as religion, but spirituality. And I think the difference is, for a lot of people, religion came with a big set of rules. And I grew up Catholic, and there are a lot of rules.
Yeah.
And for me, it's more about a sense of spirituality, to really say, okay, I was created for some purpose that's greater than just me being happy, but what can I do to make the world better? What can I do to matter in a way that benefits others? So for me, there's a spiritual component to my writing. It's just who I am. It's, it's the fabric of who Regina Brett is. I have blue eyes, and I also am kind of hungry for God. And I think most people are. Just they turn it into a hunger for food or alcohol or work. Or you know, we kind of overdo it in areas where we want to be filled. And I think power is an inside job. It comes from the inside.
I guess so. Yeah, I mean, my only comment on that, and you know, is because I'm spiritual as well, but it's that when things are going really well, then it's because I've been blessed by God. And then if something doesn't go right, you don't shake your fist at the sky and go, "Why you?" So, you know, that's why I kind of leave the earthly stuff to earthly stuff.
Well, here's the thing, though. Instead of shaking your fist, what I've learned to do, and I've done a lot of fist shaking, you know, I got pregnant at 21. I thought, oh, no, I'm not married.
Yeah.
My life's a mess.
Yeah.
Now, why God? Well, God wasn't the one that got pregnant with me.
Right.
When I got cancer, why me? You know what I realize is every experience that we want to shake our fist over, instead if we say, okay, this is an experience that life is giving me for some reason, and I can't see the reason right now, but I'm going to discover what's the reason and where's the gift in this. Because I don't think anything happens by accident.
Okay.
I think it happens not to us, but for us.
Okay. All right. So who would be the audience for this book? Is it anybody who walks the earth?
Well, I think it's for anybody. Let's say, first of all, graduates, people right coming out of college.
Yeah.
Everybody's telling them, oh, it's hard to get a job. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, you're not going to be able to get into the career field you want. I really believe there's a spot for you if you want it bad enough and you aligned yourself in the right way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's for graduates. I think it's for people who have a job, but they don't feel like it's really their calling.
Yeah.
You know, a job gives you a paycheck. A career gives you a better paycheck. To me, a mission in life, you make a difference.
Yeah.
It's something much deeper.
You know, I managed an office like for 13 years before I did this crap, and I would only hire people who I thought were going to enhance life. In other words, they can have degrees up the you-know-what and, you know, have been to the finest schools and know everything that is backwards and forwards, but if I have to look at their sourpuss all day and deal with their attitudes, then I don't want, you know, I would hire somebody with less experience who had a great spirit about them, far more than somebody who had incredible knowledge, but was just not easy to be around.
You're right.
Yeah.
Because really, it truly is, every job is as magical as you make it. It's really up to you to bring the attitude that you want to have at work, and that you can you make it a blessing? In my book, Beat a Miracle, have a lesson, magnify the good. Mm-hmm. And I always say, what if you had this like invisible magnifying glass, and every day, all through the day, you just put it on everything good and made it bigger?
Yeah.
But just ignore the stuff that doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
Don't complain about it. Don't talk about it. Just focus on the good. Man, we'd have a great day.
For some people might say that, Regina, it's really easy to say, but difficult to do when you go out there into the world and you continually get shot down. And that happens to a lot of people, and which kind of shoots their attitude. I mean, I've always said that you can't live through the eyes of other people, but yet it seems to be on this planet that's kind of the mode that almost you have to go in.
You know, one of my lessons is other people's opinions of you are none of your business. And I learned that as a columnist. Mm-hmm. And if I write a nice column about dogs, cat lovers hate me. It's like, you can't make everybody happy.
I know.
So you have to decide whose opinion really matters.
Yeah.
And it isn't not the opinion of strangers, not even like acquaintances. Who are the people whose opinions you really respect and care about?
Mm-hmm.
And that's your priority. And what the rest of the world thinks of me, it's really none of my business. And the more I really live that, boy, am I free.
It is a very freeing thing.
You know,
go on.
It is. I don't read anonymous comments about my work because they're not in the arena. They didn't put any skin in the game.
Mm.
God bless them, but I'm not going to let their opinion of me diminish me when their name isn't even on it.
I know.
But too many of us do that.
Yeah. But there was
or somebody's whispering about it. It's like, let it go. Who cares?
I know that there was a time in your life, though, probably, when it did make a difference. I mean, when you're writing and you're a journalist, you're communicating to the masses, and your effectiveness is rated commercially. Your boss is rated commercially on how well you're accepted in that particular field. So, I mean, it does come into play. And I know that when I'm in front of an audience and everybody applauds and there's one person there who's not applauding, you know, it can be accolades, but I'm focused on that one person that's not applauding. And I think that's just a...
It's human nature. You're right. 200 people could love you, but the one person that doesn't is the one you think about all day long.
Yeah.
But it's up to us to say, hey, I can't have my worth depend on somebody else.
I know.
And that was something my whole life I struggled with. Oh, criticism used to crush me. I mean, if somebody made a comment, they almost didn't like my work. Oh, I think, what did they not like? Oh, my God, I'm nothing. You know what? My self-worth can't depend on what somebody else thinks of me.
Right.
And so that's where I come back to the God stuff is, I'm worthy. God made me worthy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to prove anything. I'm already worthy.
I do understand that on this earth, on this dimension, there are a lot of things to deal with that can bombard you on a daily, minute-by-minute basis. So it is important to have something that brings you, that gets you just a little bit above that so that you can deal with it. So I guess that's what you're saying. Do I read you properly in that sense?
Yeah, I think it's up to each of us. One of my lessons is power is an inside job, and it really is. It's not up to your boss to make you happy.
Mm.
It's not up to the economy. It's not the government's job to make you happy. It's each of us has to say, I'm going to be happy today no matter what.
Mm-hmm. I get it.
You know, there was an old Charlie Brown cartoon, Peanuts, and I forget which character asked the other, what do you want to be when you grow up? And he said, I want to be outrageously happy.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a great thing to aspire?
That's the perfect thing to
say. To be outrageously happy.
Yeah.
And the thing is, it's a choice. Happiness is a choice. It isn't a certain job that makes you happy. It's that, what do I want to do when I walk into that building, whether it's a factory, an auto plant, a restaurant, you know, as a waitress, whatever. It's the spirit I bring to it that's going to make me happy or not.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, your thesis is very true. It's the jobs that, the incidental things that surround you that affect your attitude and your personality and what kind of day you're going to have, even though you should be in charge of it. But these people spark it, and they're not vice presidents of companies, and they're not owners of large conglomerates. They're the people that you just brush into every day that just have jobs that seem small but are actually very big.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and I really believe one of my lessons is most of the time the only person in your way is you. And so many of us do that. Some of you all suggest something to improve it. Well, yeah, but we can't do that. Yeah, but I'm too old. Yeah, but I'm too this. I tell people, get rid of your biggest butt. You know, all those yeah buts. that's keeping you from whatever your happiness.
Yeah, yeah.
You ever have that where you offer somebody a solution and they say, yeah, but they don't even try it out. They go, well, yeah, but that's not going to work.
Yeah.
The other day, somebody was telling me about a problem and they were going on and on. And I paused and I said, do you want to be happy? And they said, do you want to be happy? And they go, well, I've never really been happy. I said, that's not the question. Do you want to be happy? And they say yes or no. And they couldn't answer.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we don't want to be happy. We really do want to be miserable. It will change when we want it to change.
Yeah. And then we want people around us to be miserable just like us so that we don't feel like we're oddly miserable. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, attitude is everything.
It's
a
choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so...
Somebody once said you could be happy or you could be miserable. It takes the same effort.
It sure does. Actually, miserable kind of... You have to work a little bit harder at that, even though it feels like it comes naturally, but you really got to keep it up pretty good.
It does, you have to keep it up.
Yeah, you do. How do we follow the wonderful world of Regina?
You can go to reginabrett.com. I have a website, and I'd love to have people follow me on Facebook and be part of this continuing conversation. Love to see your photos on Instagram and tweets and all that stuff, and it's all there on reginabrett.com.
Great.
And I hope everybody listening really knows they are worthy of their life. They're worthy of a great, wonderful, magical life. And nobody is stopping them.
Wonderful. The newest book is God is Always Hiring, 50 Lessons for Finding Fulfilling Work. And I, again, interpret it as finding yourself, really, as the bottom line in that, I think, hidden agenda. Gina, Brett, a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for spending the time today.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care.
Okay, there you have Regina Brett with her twist on the meaning of life. I sat down once with a good friend of mine about 10 years ago, and... we weren't high or anything, although it sounded like we were. And he just posed a question to me, which was, people don't do to other people. It was a real interesting thing. And he just looked at me and said, Ron, what's the meaning of life? And I had to stop and think for a second, because I didn't really have that on the tip of my tongue at that moment. And we got into a conversation, which lasted probably about half an hour, about the meaning of life. And as much as we kind of searched within ourselves to get that answer, kind of came up easily for both of us. This is what we broke it down to. Here's the meaning of life. Like, why are we here? Like, what is it? What's the deal? And we both kind of agreed it's A, to experience it and be happy. If you're not happy through your life, then it wasn't too cool. It was a little bit uncomfortable and perhaps torturous. But if you're, and it doesn't really matter if you're poor or rich, I know very well off financially people who are totally so unhappy it's not funny. I know some very poor people that don't know where their next dollar is coming from, and they just always have a smile on their face, just happy to be alive and experiencing everything around them and their children and whatever the case may be. So A for me is happiness. There's really no point to this unless you're going to somehow mold your attitude into happiness. And number two, which I think is kind of, and it's number two to happiness, it's not my priority, but it's to make a difference in the world. It's kind of like a heady kind of thing to do, but people like to feel like they have a purpose and that they matter to somebody and that other lives were affected by theirs in a positive manner. They're into that crap. I think it's nice if you can get it. For me, it's just be happy, enjoy the ride. And with that, I will leave you today. I'll actually leave you with anything, but I'll leave you with that. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I wish you peace. I'll be back with you again on the next weekday. Until then. Bye. All right, pack up and get out of here. Maybe take a minute in your life and try to figure out what is the meaning of life to you.
Whatever.
Oh, God.